Shall we start?
Yeah, okay.
You're listening to the Momcast, the best comic book podcast recorded in Southampton on Thursday evenings. Cue the music. Wasn't as conversational as we thought it was going to be, was it?
It wasn't. It was very one-sided. You did very well, but you sounded like Mike Mansfield from ITV's late-night music show, Cue the Music. I enjoyed that very much.
Excellent. Good.
I'm imagining you with a pot belly and long white hair.
I do have a pot belly.
And your hair's reasonably long.
And it's getting a bit white in bits.
So there you go. You're turning into Mike Mansfield from ITV's Cue the Music.
Yes. This is it's probably obvious that this is the modcast. The modcast.
That's right. I've got eyeliner on and I'm sat on a scooter.
Who is it they don't like, the mods? The Rockers.
I don't like the Rockers. Don't care for them. So, Dave, you're going to have to turn off now.
I choose to take the middle path. I'm a mocker, like Ringo Starr. Peace and nice. Love, peace and love.
But don't send me your fucking letters.
It's actually the Momcast, and it's just me this week, and
me this week. Hi, I'm James.
And I'm Nick.
Hi, Nick.
What have you been up to this week, James?
I've been up to lots of things this week since I last spoke to you on the Momcast. Last week we had Scarlett's second birthday.
Oh, yeah.
So we went off to Peppa Pig World. The jury's still out on who enjoyed it most, her or I.
It was you.
Yeah, it was me. We had a great time. It was awesome. We went on rides, and while her grandparents took her on a little train ride around Poulton's Park, which is excellent. I recommend it to everyone who likes that sort of thing. They took her on a train ride, and we went, do you know these boats that are essentially just a giant swing? So it looks like a big Viking boat, essentially a giant swing. Me and Nicola's friend Kim decided to be big, brave adults and go on it, and we sat right at the back where you get the maximum effect, and Nicola was stood watching us while we were on it, and apparently I had a polo shirt on that has stripes on it of varying degree, shades of green.
Uh-huh.
And apparently Nicola said as she was watching me on the ride, she was watching me go the different shades of green that were on my shirt, apparently, because 5 minutes before I went on it, had had a chicken nugget dinner.
Lovely. Would you say that, you covered 50 whole shades of green?
Pretty much.
50 shades of green.
Absolutely.
Starring James Healy.
Oops. Absolutely.
I'll bleep that out.
Did it in our sex dungeon. I can't remember what else I did. We just did loads of stuff for Scarlett's birthday. It's been quite hectic.
We came over and saw her and she was asleep.
You did, although she loves her bubbles and bricks.
Excellent. We gave bubbles and bricks to everyone.
You came over on the day, didn't you, that it was that we went to Peppa Pig World, and she was a very sleepy girl.
She was a very happy, sleepy baby, except when she woke up, because you forced her to wake up to look at her presents, and now she hates us.
That's right. No, she loves you very much. This week, I experienced my first ever Louis C.K. stand-up, which I enjoyed a great deal, to the point where I was laughing so much I actually thought I might die at one point. I had a coughing fit. My head went very red. It was quite an uncomfortable situation.
That ain't no good and ain't no use.
He is very funny, though, isn't he?
Did you watch the $5 one?
No. It was from 2008, the one I watched.
Oh, you should definitely shell out on the $5 one, because it's only about £3.50, and you get it DRM-free, and it's lovely.
I will do. Well, I'm going to be all over. Can I purchase that from Amazon?
You'd need to purchase that direct from his site. I'll probably put it in show notes.
Okay. Actually. If you put it in the show notes, then I'll go direct to his site and buy it from there.
Oh, yeah.
But he's a funny man.
A few other comedians have followed his lead, and all of them are name-checking him and saying, thanks for showing us the way. But one of my favourites so far is Aziz Ansari.
Oh.
Who is the guy from, he's in Parks and Recreation, and he is very funny indeed.
It's the middle of July, I've just finished a lemon sip and I turn the heating on this evening. Oh.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
You're having an English summer, that's what that's all
Absolutely,
about.
Absolutely, yeah.
I feel roughly the same, I feel a bit snotty, but I think that's just because I'm so full of hate.
Possibly, yeah. That snot and bile will catch up with you.
Yeah.
What have you been up to in the last week?
I spent a lot this week angry for one reason or another.
Okay.
But yeah, it's been an odd week. I did the show with Jane last week. We should mention that Jane's not here this week. She is in
my basement in several pieces. Nick has the head though. What he's doing with that? Fine. I really don't know.
It's really wasn't expecting that, so I don't know how to respond. Where is she? Is she in a foreign country?
She is. She's in Scotland because it's her it was her birthday on Tuesday. So her and life partner Steve have gone on her first ever plane journey. And they've gone to Edinburgh for a few days, which is very exciting.
Is there anything in particular going on in Edinburgh?
Just general Scottishness, I think.
Oh, excellent. Well, Scottish people are great fun. So, very trustworthy. I don't know if they're very trustworthy, but they have very trustworthy voices.
Yeah, that's true. It was a Scottish that introduced me to Louis C.K. this week.
Really?
Really.
They can basically convince you of anything, no matter how nonsensical.
They're
with
sly.
With that voice of theirs. Mm-hmm. Mm. But yeah, so my week, it's been okay. But I'm on holiday next week.
Yay.
We can talk about that later.
Cool.
Our listener can get in touch with us at momcast@gmail.com and tell us if they think we're good or if they think we're rubbish or if they want to contribute to the show or ask us any questions. That's momcast@gmail.com.
Or if they want to sell us lolcat pictures.
Lolcat pictures. Sell us lolcat pictures.
Did I say sell us? I mean send us. I'm not buying one.
Oh, you might have said send us. I don't know. I'm just wondering if there is an after sale, like a pre-sold lolcats market.
Well, it's possible that a listener could use one of the ways to contact us to clarify exactly what I said there.
Yes. Yes, they could. So that's the email. You can also contact James on Twitter at
James Momb, MOMB.
Uh-huh. And you can contact me at Nick's site. That's NIXSIGHT. That's a name that comes from back when the internet was all puns. 100% puns. And weirdly spelt words like cool kids would spell them.
Yeah, it's looking a little bit. You need to probably have a look at that now, don't you? Maybe freshen it up a bit.
Did you used to have a graffiti tag? In the 80s, you're about the same age as me.
I never had a graffiti tag. No, I was a very good boy in the 80s.
Oh, no, none of the people I knew actually did graffiti. But we all used to practice out what our tags would be in our exercise books.
I was more into bubble writing than graffiti.
That's pretty much the same. You were practicing what you would be if you were a graffiti artist. Mine was like a Nick. It was approximately like my handwriting, but it was spelled N-I-K, which, funnily enough, is the opposite of the spelling that I seem cursed with now, which is N-I-C. And sometimes the K would sweep, and at the end there'd be a little arrow.
Was that influenced by Nick Kershaw, who, of course, was an N-I-K?
I don't know. I really hope not.
I don't know. I still quite like them. The Riddle, I think it's a seminal album.
Seminal.
Well, yeah, turns me on.
There is audio evidence of probably what I was listening to and what I was like back then that you've heard, haven't you, James?
I have, it's excellent. One day, when none of us can do the podcast, you really should post those as a momcast gap filler.
I'm going to have to track them down. I'm sure my cousin can help with that.
Mm.
Are you drinking tonight, James?
No, I'm not. Well, I had a lemon sip, but no, I'm not drinking. Are you drinking?
Can I warn you, I have had a bit of wine.
Oh.
I'm sure it'd be okay, though. I've got exceptional tolerance. I am Greek.
This could get... Yes, I noticed today. I noticed you demonstrating the time-honoured Greek trait of their complete inability to get on with one another, which made me very sad.
It's just, I think our friend Elemental Micah, or is that actually his, like, a pen name he uses, or is it just the name of his character?
It's the name of his character.
Because I think his Tumblr or something's called it as well.
Having read Elemental Micah, I don't think he's autobiographical.
I don't know. I think one of his Tumblr account or something has called it. But Michael Georgiou, friend of the show, he and I are both Brit Greeks. We're both Gringlish. But I suspect his parents were a bit like soft and English. I don't know. We'll find out.
I would like to know. I'm curious now. I would like to know from Mike if he's ever had a lover stuck up a tree for 30 days.
I don't know why I found that so funny. Not with my exceptional alcohol tolerance. you can also talk to us. You can kind of get a hold of us on Google Plus and Facebook and Tumblr, but mainly Tumblr because that's where sometimes we post pictures. There are lots of comic pictures up there.
And of course, don't forget there's John Momb, JonMomb, and Jane Momb on Twitter as well.
Momb.
Yes.
Well, she's getting old now. We may have to replace her for a younger model.
I reckon we've got, what, 2-3 years left, and then it really is into the mincer, and then we're auditioning for another young female geek presenter.
Yeah.
Because that's how we roll.
It's all about keeping the quotas up.
Absolutely. Well, it's got us to where we are today.
This isn't quite Howard Stern, is it? I don't think we're not really selling the whole slight misogyny thing.
I can do some Howard Stern. Whoa, I got a naked woman dancing here. Whoa, naked women. Woohoo, naked women. Woohoo. How's that?
That was pretty good. You're really good at voices. I can't do voices.
I'm a man of at least three voices.
I can do... this is me doing the podcast. Hey, it's me doing the podcast.
Excellent.
And... then there's me doing the Momcast Spotlight, where it's like the other one, but I say a lot more. So it's like, this is me doing the Spotlight, And then, oh no, that's it. I only do two voices, James. That's
I do a lot of ums, though.
I do a lot of ums.
Next time we do a competition, I'm just thinking, just to keep it lively for you, the question's going to be an count.
But that would mean I'd have to count all of the ums.
Oh. Yeah.
Shereed, did you get to buy any comics this week? Should we talk about
some
comics?
Buy a shit ton of comics yesterday.
An actual metric shit ton.
A metric shit ton. As I believe I mentioned to you, as I was staggering under the weight of them back to work yesterday afternoon when I saw you in the park.
You can go through a few of them if you like, because we do not have a spotlight this week. It's worth mentioning.
So, it's a slightly different show. Let's call it a summer special.
It's a very special Momcast.
Tonight, on a very special Momcast, I have some very special feelings, Nick, and I think we need to discuss them.
I think we quite often do, James.
Oh, dear. I've turned into Blossom, and I thought I wanted to reveal that here.
I
didn't like Blossom.
Was Joey Lawrence on Blossom as well?
Probably.
One of the many shows where he played a character called Joey.
Probably. Was he in Charles in Charge? I miss Charles in Charge.
No. Charles in Charge was... Was it Justin Bateman? Bieber.
Who?
I think it was Justin Bateman.
Oh, yeah, I think it... Was it? I don't think he was Charles, was he?
I'm not sure. I'm going to look that up while you do something.
Okay. Surprisingly... Although I bought quite a mix of books, I've managed to not read any straight-up superhero books for the podcast this week. I think probably the closest I'm going to get is number one. I should have done some research because I think it's a one-shot, but I'm not sure. It's Chew, Secret Agent Polio.
Polio.
Polio. which is a story about the chicken that we've seen in Chew, the super hard chicken called Poyo, who is enlisted to solve in the UK a mystery with a evil doctor who's got a comedy name. He's called Ulbrich Regenbogen.
That is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. He is a ridiculous man. And he's worked out the secret of, you know, obviously there's these strange phenomena where fish or frogs fall out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this evil scientist has figured out the science behind that. He's figured out how to harness that. And he's now blackmailing the world with potential downpours of farm animals.
That is ridiculous.
So in the world where food standards agencies are the most powerful in the world, Agent Poyo, after fighting his way back from hell, is hired by DEFRA in the UK, which is, for the uninitiated, is the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. It is a real thing, if you're unaware. DEFRA really exists.
Really?
Yeah, DEFRA really exists.
That sounds ridiculous.
I've got a friend who's a farmer, so I'm all over that shit. And Poyo is enlisted to take down the evil doctor. I don't know if you follow, we talk about James Hewitt a lot, who's going to feature probably quite heavily in the books I'm talking about today. James Hewitt, yeah. That's his name. Or is it Hewlett?
No, James Hewlett works in the shop. Wasn't James Hewitt something to do with the royal family?
Prince Harry's dad.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. So he works in a comic book
shop. For satirical purposes.
Yeah, of course. For satirical purposes, our friend who works in a comic book shop sired a royal. he said it's the funniest book he's read all week, and I agree with him. It's really silly. It's exactly what you'd expect from Chew. It's irreverent, colourful, ultra-violent fun. The story doesn't have masses of depth, but it is awesome. If you haven't picked up Chew previously, I would highly recommend picking up this Image book, which at $3.50 is pretty good value, actually. It's a nice back matter with some high-profile fan art. There's stuff in here from John McRae, Tony Parker, Ben Temple-Smith, Joe Eisner. It's lovely. Really nice stuff.
It does sound good. Can I just clarify something?
Yes.
Charles in Charge was apparently Scott Bio.
Who was Thingy from Happy Days.
He was Chachi. Happy Days and Chachi Loves Joni.
That's it.
The show. People get confused. Joni Loves Chachi was unrelated to Happy Days. That was a different show. He was in Chachi Loves Joni.
I wonder how that relationship panned out long term.
I think I was rooting for those kids. I was especially rooting for her. Her name was Joni. That's all I really remember.
If Happy
about
Days
her.
Was set in the '50s, though,
she'd be quite old now, wouldn't
and
she?
And they were in their what? Their late teens, early twenties.
Scott Bao is aging quite well, then, isn't he?
He is. It's remarkable.
He was also. I know him from Bugsy Malone.
I love that film so much.
Which was also the first appearance of
Jodie Foster.
Dexter Fletcher.
Well, Dexter Fletcher, of course.
Yeah, I think Jodie Foster was in Taxi Driver before that, I think. I'm not sure.
Of course she was.
And I thought for a minute I was confused with Who's the Boss, which was Tony Danza, was in that. What I was actually thinking of, apparently, was It's Your Move, starring Jason Bateman. Which was a show about him and his divorcee mother. I don't know if she was a divorcee or her husband had died.
No, she was well known, wasn't she? Who played his mother?
In It's Your Move?
Yeah.
It was... let me see if I can remember.
No, it's
Karen
a white...
Kay, maybe?
All right, okay. Well, that's not a name that immediately fires my memory banks. But as an aside, Bugsy Malone was the first Blu-ray I bought.
Was it?
Yeah, don't clean up that well, but it's still a lovely film.
I love that film. It's an Alan Parker classic.
Yeah. Actually, I haven't sat Scarlett down in front of it. I think that might be something for a wet weekend, which I think we've got ahead of us. So there you go. That's what I'm doing this week. I'm going to sit my daughter down in front of Bugsy Malone.
She needs to learn that anybody who is anybody will soon walk through that door.
True. And that she could be anybody that she wants to be. She's the very best at shitting in nappies.
That's a bit tragic, because if that's one of the things she's good at, she can only really get worse at it, can't she?
Yeah, she'll probably develop other skills, I imagine.
But the hope is, but she will no longer be the champion at shitting in nappies.
Can't last forever. No. Even the greatest athletes have to retire, Nick.
Yeah, I think the peak time in that particular sport, that particular competitive sport, is when you're about 1 to 2.
I agree. No, as a nappy shitter, she is absolutely reaching the peak of her game.
It'll all be over soon.
It will, but, you know, on to bigger and better things, hopefully.
There's no Wimbledon for that sport, is there?
And there should be. That's what really disgusts me. No one really takes it seriously. No Olympic medals for it.
And yet it's the one thing that all of us have a proper go at being contenders.
Yeah, I reckon I could have a go at it right now. I tell you what. No, never mind. I was going to talk about the after effects of eating a vindaloo curry, but I think that would be a bit crude.
It's a bit broad.
Bit yeah, isn't it?
It's a bit broad in 1980s.
It is, yes. Although if this was 1980s, we wouldn't be making a podcast.
No,
I forgot to say, of course, Chew is created by John Layman and Rob Guillory.
Oh, right.
I forgot to say that, and we should. I'm sure everyone knows, but I feel bad not giving those creators credit.
You've mentioned it a lot.
I have. Shall I talk about the next comic?
What's the next comic?
I've got about half a dozen to get through.
Go on, then. Get a move on.
Okay, I'll hurry up. The second book I'm going to talk about is by S. Stephen Struble, Cena Grace. It's issue 12 at $2.99 of The Little Depressed Boy.
Oh, you love that.
I do very much, and I feel really bad, and quite rightly, S. Stephen Struble called me out some time ago on this when I said, I'm not sure if this has got legs. I didn't really understand that it's a long-form, decompressed story that's just... It's just slice of life, you know? It's a hyper-realised... It's almost like hyper-realised Picard, you know?
Yeah.
As in Harvey, not the captain of the Starship Enterprise.
Yes.
Which is Picard, anyway. But this is another one that James absolutely loves. Little Depressed Boy, obviously his life ebbs and flows. And in the 12th issue, we see what hopefully may be an epiphany for him and his relationship with ladies.
Who are confusing to him.
They are confusing to him. Life is confusing to him, I think. And I think we can probably... I think what's really clever about the character, and I think very possibly I'm a little bit old at this point to be able to do it properly, but I think if you're reading this book... and you're in your early to mid-20s, the nice thing about Little Depressed Boy is he's a blank canvas that you can really easily imprint yourself on as a reader.
Yeah.
And I think he speaks to that sort of, that confusion that you have maybe in your early, mid, late 20s, early 30s, mid-30s, late 30s, 40s. Your life is starting to pan out. You're in the real world, the world of work, the world of relationships, and it's that horrible realization that slowly comes over you in waves that actually life isn't quite as exciting as you might have thought it was going to be. That reality kind of sucks a bit more than we're told when we're growing up, you know?
Yeah.
Or led to believe that, you know, unless you're either very lucky or you have worked extremely hard, that actually. Probably what's ahead for you is a life of just trying to get by, you know, which is, that's a fundamental reality for us all. I'm sorry if I'm bringing you down.
I wonder if we should have put this out of a trigger warning.
Maybe. Well, it's time yet. But it's beautiful, it's gentle, it's wonderfully written, it looks lovely. Little Depressed Boy is such a lovely, sympathetic character. I genuinely just want to hug the dude, you know? But it's lovely. This is a really nice... There's some really nice character progression in this issue too. I very much enjoyed it.
I'm glad to hear that. I stopped, as we know. But he literally is a blank canvas, isn't he? He's got a canvas face.
Yeah, which is the genius of the character, isn't it?
Mm.
I think. So I definitely think more people should be reading that. I know plenty are, but everyone should read it. Talking of character progression, issue 14 of Jennifer Blood came out as well, which is at $3.99 by Dynamite Comics,
mm-hmm.
Written by Al Ewing. This month, illustrated by Cuba Ball. Sorry. I'm having a coughing fit. That's really inconvenient.
You're not going to die, are you?
Well, eventually.
Okay.
It took me a little while to dial into Cuba's art, which is, it's lovely, to be honest. I ummed and ahed as to whether I was enjoying it in places, but actually once I dialed into it, I enjoyed it very much. As in the last book, there's some genuine character progression in this. We've seen Jennifer Blood's character, you know, we called her the Momisher. She was going after a group of gangsters who were part of her family who'd taken her father out. So it was a revenge tale. Now we're getting to see what happens to this woman once that's done.
Mm-hmm.
And we're basically getting to see the depth of her psychosis, which is very interesting. This relationship, there's no violence really to speak of at all. It's about a relationship with her and her husband. And we learn a lot more about him, but we learn a whole lot more about her and a whole lot more about who she really is inside. I think what I like about this most, we've mentioned it before, Jane reads it as well, that I feel like Al Ewing has managed to imprint his own voice on the story after the initial arc written by Garth Ennis finished. But now he's really picked up the character and he's running with her. And it really is his voice, loud and clear now. And I'm really intrigued. It's another story where I wasn't entirely sure I knew where it was going to go long term. But this book offers some very intriguing possibilities for the future.
Uh-huh. It feels like he's been working on bits at 2000 AD and things like that. It's a name that's been around for a while, but
yeah.
This year seems to have been really... Al Ewing's name seems to have popped quite a lot as far as Jennifer Blood's concerned, certainly.
Definitely. And obviously he's a name that we're sympathetic to because we love 2000 AD.
Oh, yeah.
He's very satisfying. It's very satisfying to me to see him in the sort of the longer form American comic book, getting to see him tell stories over a 22 page format book.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that the second trade of Jennifer Blood came out today, which is Al's first arc. So the first two trades are out now. So if you want to get on Jennifer Blood, it's probably quite a good time.
I need to pick those up. I haven't read them at all, and you guys love them.
They're really, really cool. Some or all of these books you may have yourself. Conan the Barbarian, number 6.
Oh, yeah.
$3.50 by Brian Wood, James Harron and Dave Stewart came out. Did you pick it up? Did you read it?
I did. I read it. It is gorgeous. James Harron's art, I really... you might have been about to say this, but I know I've said it before. It was a bit of a blow to have Becky Cloonan off the book so quickly.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because she did the first arc. But James Harron's art, especially with Dave Stewart's colours as well, is just beautiful, isn't it?
It's awesome. Yeah. And there's a lot of action. I think his art flows really beautifully. There's a lot of movement in his art for the action scenes, isn't there?
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, it just looks amazing. I saw... I think it was Duncan Figueredo and maybe Brandon Graham talking about Anatomy,
uh-huh.
and about Conan and about how wowed Duncan Figueredo was, certainly by James Harron. That's a hell of a compliment,
isn't it?
Because he's an amazing artist. But yeah, it's just, I don't think I've seen James Harron's artwork in a comic before. I think I follow him on Tumblr or something, but
uh-huh.
It's just amazing.
It is beautiful. I think it wraps up a three part story where Conan and his pirate queen lover Belit,
that's it,
have conspired to help the inhabitants of Argos shed themselves from some of their riches. And as the plan unfolds, he's essentially planning to escape and also looking for Bellet, who helped orchestrate his escape in the last issue. Which is, and it's just lovely. It's just Brian Wood's writing. It's told, I think, with a relatively light touch. It's certainly not dialogue heavy. There is a fair amount of narrative exposition, isn't there? There's the narrator's box, but it's Haran's art is allowed to tell an awful lot of the story still, I think.
Certainly, and it's there's the dialogue's really good and certainly very light. Because there's some nice interaction between Conan and the wise old dude.
Their relationship in this book in particular is just really satisfying, but it delivers such a large amount of information.
It's a very different. It is quite a different voice. A lot of the stuff Brian Wood's doing at the moment seems to be more fun than I think some of the stuff. He seems to be having more fun with dialogue and his voice, especially in the captions, than I've seen him do in other books.
Definitely.
But one thing that's interesting is, I'm sure I remember Conan being quite melodramatic in terms of the narration in comics before, certainly at Marvel. I think I've only really read the Marvel comics. But I quite like how gently reflective Conan is in this.
Yeah.
Like, he's a warrior, but he's not fearless by any stretch of the imagination, and he's trying to work out how much he should tie himself to. He's totally devoted to Bellet, but he starts to wonder in this issue whether or not that stifles him in some way.
Absolutely, but that's handled really nicely with the conversations between him and the wise old man. So
certainly, yeah, it is. I mean, and that makes it sound really relationshipy, but it isn't at all. It all fits with the time. I was just reading in the back that the next arc, Becky Cloonan's back with guest artist Vasilis Lolos.
Lovely.
So I guess she's working with someone else on that, so that'll be nice. And she's also doing a Batman comic.
The next issue of Batman features her art. We go into Snyder's Joker arc, which I'm very excited about.
Can I just mention as well, because it's amazing, the Massimo Carnival cover with Bellet and Conan having a romantic moment against a violent backdrop is just gorgeous.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful. Actually, I'm just staring at it now. I feel slightly aroused.
She looks a little bit like, not Lizzie Kaplan, the other one who's in Two Broke Girls. Oh. Huh. Okay, so
you're
what
right,
else did
you're
you read?
You're right, my love. next up.
I have arrived. I am arriving. I am here. That's my cum voice.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. Next book I'm going to talk about is another Dark Horse book, which I'm sure you've read as well, because it's by Brian Wood also.
Is it Junglist?
He's the Massive.
Yeah, I read that.
Massive. Have you read it?
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Oh, God. do you want to just recap the story a little bit?
Okay, so the Massive is a giant environmental campaigning ship, a bit like maybe a massive Rainbow Warrior, Greenpeace Rainbow Warrior. But it's gone missing mysteriously after an event that's known as the Crash, which a number of environmental disasters have befallen the world, and basically society kind of looks like it's breaking down.
Mm.
And we follow a ship that's Capitale.
Capitale, that's it.
We have its smaller sister ship, which is, and they're all part of a, they're called the Ninth Wave Oceanic Activist Group.
Mm-hmm.
When we last saw them, they were just off the coast of Russia, The captain of the ship had sent his crewmate and lover out to intercept some Russians who were in danger of potentially overrunning his ship. And they sit in fog trying to find her and trying not to be detected by the Russian pirates, I guess you'd call them, for want of a better.
Yeah, I think that's what they are.
I think that's it in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah. That's pretty much it. It's told in a really interesting way, though, because it makes a lot of use of flashbacks.
Yeah.
Well, to say they're flashbacks is kind of a little bit disingenuous. It just, there's the current stuff that's happening, but at the same time it's filling in gaps about what happened before, and there's two or three different streams going on. There's two or three different streams going on as well. So there's the action that's happening right now, which is very exciting, and then there's their experiences very early in the days after the crash. And then at the same time, Brian Wood's doing these really amazing info dumps about what happened to the world during the crash. All of it just beautifully realised by Christian Donaldson. I was a little bit unfair about this last time because I said that I thought there was lots of computer modelling going on, which was fine, but that that there were times when the original art, that the art that wasn't computer modeled, like the people, sort of swam against the stuff in the background, and I think that was unfair. I just think I don't think it's a very heavily rendered book, and I think my brain was having trouble processing how actually gorgeous it was. But it is really good, and the action sequences, because there is quite a lot of it in here, all work really well. His people act really well. The facial expressions are great and stuff. Like
the art's deliciously crisp, isn't it? It's really lovely.
The post-crash Hong Kong that they encounter, it's just amazing. It just looks amazing.
It's the ideas, isn't it? It's, Hong Kong, essentially, as part of the crash, there's been seismic activity. Mm. And Hong Kong, essentially, rather than being affected by earthquakes, because of tectonic shifting beneath it, is what, sunk 30 feet, but without damage.
Yeah, it kind of almost went down into the ground like an elevator. And it's just, I guess it's, have you read DMZ?
I've read up to about the fourth or fifth trade of DMZ.
Because I read the first book and I have to catch up with that, but it almost feels like, although it isn't the same world, and it's very different because this is about environmental disaster and that one's about financial collapse, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or economic and societal collapse.
Yeah.
But they're kind of, they feel a little bit like sister books, because that's his story about New York in the wake of this major but conceivable change. And the Massive is like that, but on a worldwide scale.
Yeah.
Really. A beautifully designed book as well. I think Brian Wood probably had a lot to do with the design of the book, because it looks like his old Channel Zero. Well, in some of the things he did with DMZ, his sense of design is very clear, and you can sort of see it through most of the book. The back matter, it's one of the few books where the back matter I actually read as well.
Do you know, I didn't this week. I feel awfully guilty.
I haven't even done that with Watchmen, and I've done it with both issues of The Massive. It's really interesting.
It is. I read it in the first one. I haven't read it in this one, and I'm afraid, because I've now read the book, it's unlikely I'm going to go back to it. But it was really good last week.
It's just amazing how much detail he picks out of how each of his characters is completely realised. Aren't they? I can't remember if there are any character histories in the first one. But the extra detail you get in the back is just, aspect of these people's lives seems really authentic. It's lovely.
There was lots of information about the Ninth Wave and the history of the group, I think, in the first book, which was fascinating. Yeah, it's all lovely, engaging stuff. I'm sorry, I sound a bit I made the mistake of opening up Twitter. Mm-hmm. And it's odd, we're talking about Brian Wood, and he's just popped up in my at mentions.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mentioned some really exciting Brian Wood news on Twitter, that he's going to be writing a Star Wars title.
Oh, really?
For Dark Horse in January.
People are starting to offer him the more, like, commercial work. Which, that's good. Or maybe they always did, but he's just taking it now. I don't know.
I just think it's terribly exciting. I think I said on Twitter earlier, it's, for me, Star Wars, whether it's in film, television, Clone Wars cartoon aside, or in comics, just feels a bit stale.
Mm.
And the idea of someone with the size of imagination and the storytelling ability of Brian Wood getting hold of a franchise that still excites me so much. All geeks our age, surely.
Yes.
Still have a massive place in their hearts for Star Wars. The idea of a man of this his level of creativity makes my mouth drool. It's the most exciting geek news I've read for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, Dark Horse are really making use of him at the moment, or he's really making use of his relationship with them. I like it, it's good. I might even end up buying that. I almost bought... he's just started a run this week on Ultimate X-Men.
Yes.
And I was very tempted, but it's a $3.99 book, and it's an Ultimate book, and I'll get it in trade, I think.
I think I said something similar. I tend not to buy any of the Ultimate books in floppy because I know I will lock in completely. So I decided to avoid it.
They're quite expensive, and they're also normally very decompressed. You're kind of used to that.
Yeah.
And so it's not the most satisfying experience on a monthly basis, I think. But yeah, Brian Wood, eh?
Absolutely. I think he's a genius.
Mm.
I like him very much.
Yes, me
too. Not as much as Jonathan Hickman, obviously, you know, but, you know, what can I
do? Does Jonathan Hickman really like him?
I don't know, we should find out. Ask Jonathan Hickman on Twitter later, and I'm sure he'll ignore me, quite rightly.
What other books have you been reading?
Last up is a book that I picked up very much on the strength of the name of the artist and writer, as much as anything, and the fact I had to flick through. And it's gorgeous. It's Vertigo. It's number one. It's Punk Rock Jesus.
Oh, yeah, or, that looked good. I didn't pick it up.
Or if you're my wife, Spunk Jesus.
Spunk Jesus is a better name, almost. We should do a comic called that.
Almost. $2.99. It's 1/6. And as I say, it's written and drawn in beautiful black and white inked pages by Sean Murphy, who first came to my attention. I don't know about you. Through Joe the Barbarian.
Yeah, that was when I first saw his art. He is amazing.
Did you buy it?
Is it on, like, newsprint?
Yeah, it is, yes, on that lovely sort of pulpy stock that Vertigo use.
Hmm.
Which I really like. I like the matte finish. I think I've said on the podcast before, I like the matte finish because it makes it easier to read under the light when you're on your belly on the bed.
Matt Finish sounds like he should be some sort of secret agent.
He is, and he appears in
this book. Lots of ladies.
The book itself, as well as looking gorgeous, Sean Murphy definitely has a very European style. This could quite easily, you know, looking through it, I could quite easily believe it if you told me this had first been published through Cinebook or a, you know, a European publisher. It's really has that feel to it. But it's an interesting story. It's a social commentary. A large corporation has that was a big I enjoyed that. A large corporation has employed the services of a expert geneticist who has extracted DNA from the Turing Shroud, and in a televised selection process, they've implanted a fertilized egg into a young virgin to give birth to the second coming of Christ, and this is all televised. It's a massive reality television event.
It sounds like it should have been called Spunk Jesus.
It should have been called Spunk Jesus. At this point, it is Spunk Jesus. So we have this massive story about, you know, this hugely significant child born to this very naive girl plucked out of obscurity, satirizing the current trend for reality TV. But we also have a second story, very dark story going on, of the guy who's employed to be the bodyguard in the facility in which this is all happening. And it's his story that we see in essentially what is the cold open to the story. He's a young man living in a very troubled environment in Northern Ireland, what must be the 80s, I assume. I'm not quite sure. I don't think it dates at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Very graphic, very violent, very bloody, very disturbing opening scenes. Obviously, he's going to be very significant to the story. How exactly the prologue will mesh into the bigger story remains to be seen. There are at times, I was having a conversation with our friend David, there are times when sometimes the violence seems almost a little cartoon, mm-hmm. a little bit too over the top. But I think at its core, this is a really heartfelt, thoughtful, quite intelligent story. Sometimes when you go to a book, I think just for the artist, it's the an artist has written and drawn their own book. Sometimes they're not all, artists are not always the very best writers, are they? I think it's fair to say. I think it's only a very lucky few that have a skill in both. But I think Sean Murphy seems like a very accomplished storyteller. It's a really, really enjoyable book with very, very few faults, as far as I could tell.
It feels like he's just getting started as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you hear it when I'm typing on the typey thing?
I can't, no, but I can't hear much anyway, and I'm so busy snuffling and coughing myself that's probably more distracting than you typing, I imagine.
This microphone is amazing.
Is it?
I love it. I love our robot cock microphone.
Oh, you are using robot cock?
I am using Robocock, yes.
Oh, good for you. But that's all the books that I've bought that I've read so far, apart from one that I imagine you've read too.
Mm-hmm.
A slightly larger book. So I don't know if you
want to talk about it.
You can talk about it.
2000 AD, issue 1791. That's 1791 to you, James.
Yes.
Interesting issue. It's kind of the penultimate issue before a major shake-up, I think. And it's got a lovely Nicolai Dante cover. Because, of course, it's the final episode of Nicolai Dante.
It is.
Shall we just talk about... Have you read it all yet?
I've read Dread, and I've read Nicolai Dante, and... Oh, goodness. What's the story that's immediately after Dread?
Absalom. No, Ichabod Asriel.
Oh, yeah, I've read Ichabod Asriel as well.
Okay. Let's talk about Nicolai Dante first, because I find it quite interesting. I was talking to a colleague at work about this today as well. First up, it's really well written. Robbie Morrison does a great job. I think, anyway. And Simon Fraser on art and Gary Caldwell on colours are just brilliant. I think the interesting thing about Simon Fraser is that his art's still very recognisable as his art, going back right to the early Nicolai Dante stuff and Lux and Albi that he did years ago.
Uh-huh.
But it's also developing, and he's clearly getting better at managing a page, I think. It was unusual. The story takes place against the backdrop of the impending wedding... Nicolai Dante's impending wedding, and he finds himself stuck having a game of Russian roulette with the father of the bride, who is a fugitive, who is the previous Tsar. Is that all about right?
That's right, Vlad.
Vlad.
Yes.
Who apparently, I was finding out today, Nikolai previously worked for, but who's been in exile for a while or has been in prison for a while. And I think it's all handled really well. Vlad's giving him a... he's using the sit-down that he's got by having this game of Russian roulette with him as an opportunity to try and frame the challenges that he thinks Nikolai's going to face over the next few years. And so it's quite interesting. It's quite talky, but it's all against the backdrop of this really tense game of Russian roulette. And it all finishes nicely. It finishes perfectly well. I actually personally think it's a really satisfying finish to the Nikolai Dante story because it is apparently the last one. What I found really weird though was that it's quite a quiet, without giving anything away, it's quite a quiet and restrained finale.
It is.
And they've been building up to this a lot in the editorially. They've been building up to this quite a lot over the last few months.
The promotion does not fit the reality.
Exactly, which is normally the case, I know. But it just seems ever so slightly at odds with the quite nice story you get. But I did really like it, and the more I think about it, the more I like that they finished it that way. There is a hilariously self-indulgent but beautiful final page spread, which was really great.
Nobody goes to Disneyland, but it's satisfying nonetheless.
Yes, I believe that's what you said earlier on, which amused me.
Yeah,
I really like the Judge Dredd story.
Yeah, very sexy.
Written by Al Ewing with art by Andrew Curry, taking place immediately after, well, in the weeks after the Days of Chaos. But also a kind of a quite traditional Judge Dredd story.
Yeah. The first for a very long time, actually.
Sorry?
It feels like the first traditional sort of done-in-one little story for a while. I know they've had some little done-in-ones against the backdrop of Day of Chaos, but I don't know, this feels like the first sort of... It's quite cheeky, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I like it a lot. It's the first part of an ongoing story, I think.
Oh, okay.
And there's a character introduced... Actually, he might have been in it before, thinking about it, called Della, who's... it's a very sort of crime noir story, which is really good. Which is interesting, because Lenny Zero's back, I believe, next week. So that'll be interesting, because it sort of occupies similar... thematic space, really. One thing though that I have to comment on, because I noticed it when I was reading it and somebody else I was talking to today was saying the same thing. Andrew Curry's art, it's the colours and art are really, really good. It's a really good looking story. There's a little bit of there's a sort of a judge cabaret of sort of floozies dressed as judges, which is all very titillating and nice. And there's also a female judge in it. But what's interesting is... you're all right, you're not going to die on me, are you?
Not just yet.
What's interesting is that the female judge is quite heavily sexualized by the art in a way that just really seems at odds with being a judge.
And we met her, was it last week in Bean Counter or the week before?
Oh, she's the accountant. Yeah, Maitland.
Her uniform has changed considerably since we last met her.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange, not least because in the first panel you see her in, she's doing something. She's doing something with her hands that makes it look as if she's very deliberately unzipping her uniform down to show off her cleavage, but I think it's just an accident of the panel. It's just a bit peculiar in what's an otherwise really solidly done piece of Dredd, basically.
Yeah. It made me slightly uncomfortable. Didn't so much have a problem with the dancers, because that's very much in keeping with the characters in that story, but the Maitland, did you say, the judge?
Yeah, Maitland.
That jarred with me a little bit.
Ichabod Azrael. No, I agree entirely. Ichabod Azrael, it continues to be gorgeous. We're on the third part of that.
And it's becoming clear where the story's going now, which is very cool.
The first two chapters were a little bit confusing, weren't they?
They were. I think it's often the way with 2000 AD, so sometimes you just have to go with it, don't you? Because it's only so much water carrying you can do in, what, five pages or so.
Unless they're doing a really obvious job of it, which I know they always used to do. Yeah, I think you're right. But Rob Williams and Don Reardon doing a really good job here. It's a really nice, weird, supernatural story. The art's just got... I love Don Reardon's artwork so much. And there's the finale of the Thugs Thriller. That doesn't work, does it?
No, not at all.
Thriller, which I quite enjoyed, by Keck W. and Michael Dowling. And there's a David Bailey... there's a David Bailey Future Shock as well.
Is David Bailey just a staff writer on there now? He's in there every week.
I know he's had a few Future Shocks in there. They're quite fun. It's the art by Mark Simmons. Reminds me a little bit of Disraeli as well. It's a story about nanomachines, so it's going to get... You know, I'm going to love it because I love nanomachines. But it does feel like this issue was in a little bit of a holding pattern before the next one. Because next week we've got Lenny Zero, we've got Aquila starts.
Yay.
There's a new Red Sea story, which I was just starting to get into last time.
Yeah.
So I'm quite looking forward to that. So it's going to be good, I reckon. Next week's 2000 AD.
Aquila, I've been looking forward to. It's a combination of two things I like very much. Obviously, the time frame it's in, I'm very fond of the Romans, and we think Lee Gallagher is awesome. So
he's dreamy.
He's dreamy.
Could you hear? Can you hear that?
What are you scratching?
It's my beard.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
I just scratched mine.
I don't have any beard dandruff. That's beautiful.
That's lovely. Thank you.
The only other book I bought this week was, because we've covered most of the books I bought, was the first issue of Revival, which was a $2.99 book from Image. There were two covers. I picked up the Craig Thompson one because it's beautiful. And it's written by Tim Seeley with art by Mike Norton. It's called Revival, and it says it's a rural noir.
Oh.
Which are a few too many R's for me, because apparently Greeks roll their R's, but I have never been able to do it.
You sounded very West Country when you said you were trying to say roll their R's.
R's, yeah.
Okay. That's a third voice you do.
R, yar. Oh, also check out the soundtrack by Sono Morti at sonomorti.bandcamp.com. I'll have to check that out. It says it's a rural noir. I find that a little bit misleading. I think the word noir gets appropriated. Noir.
Noir.
Gets used an awful lot. But this is essentially a supernatural... It is rural. It is quite dark. I imagine it has themes in common with classic noir. But it's... Essentially what's happened is... we're following... we're following a young woman who works for the sheriff's office, whose father also happens to be the sheriff.
Okay.
In rural US, so around Wisconsin way. And her father, she has a difficult relationship with her father, but he... assigns her to a special squad who are keeping tabs on what they call, I think they call them the revivalists. What's happened in this area and has led to them being under CDC quarantine is people who were dead have just started like getting up and not being dead anymore. They're calling them revivalists, I think. Her team is euphemistically called the Revitalized Citizen Arbitration Team. Basically, in this area, for some reason that nobody has worked out yet, and religious people are trying to claim as religious, scientists are trying to work out scientific reasons for, people have started coming back from the dead and just, you know, going about their business, in most cases, just going about their normal business, and nobody knows quite why. But in some cases, there are issues arising. These people haven't quite come back quite right. And so the sheriff's office needs a team to keep an eye on things. There's lots of... The core of the story is very grounded in the situation that this sheriff finds herself in. And I really should have worked out what the names were before I started talking about it. There's lots of information being introduced in this one, because you're basically finding out about this small town, and you only really find out what this weird thing is that people keep alluding to towards the very end of it. But at the same time as all of this, policey stuff's going on, and this weird supernatural element of the people coming back from the dead is going on. Uh-huh. There's also peculiar sort of ghosty type creatures turning up. There's a family drama at the centre of it, whereby we are following the daughter who has the older daughter who has the difficult relationship with the father. But she finds her little sister who is at university along the way. And so there's a little bit of... That's a little bit uncomfortable, because they both clearly know that the younger one is the father's favourite, and there's other stuff going on there as well. And it's all set against this backdrop of these small towns and... these little back roads and... these little farms and stuff like that. It starts on one of the weirdest, most beautiful scenes, actually, of... And I don't know if these are real. They seem... It's one of the few elements in the book that's just delivered as if it's completely normal. It's actually completely normal, but I'm not sure if they actually are. As a sort of a tourist attraction, they crossbreed zebras and horses. So it starts on this scene of this.
What would you call that?
I don't even know. I think they do refer to it, but I can't even remember.
Zorse. Horbra.
I'm just not even Zorba.
Zorba, of course.
You would have thought maybe you would Zorba. Have I don't that. Know. Mm. Hang on. Let's see if I can find it. Nope. I can't find it. It's just very, very peculiar.
I look it up on the internet.
You're going to look it up?
Yeah, there must be a name for it.
Well, anyway, but it starts on this scene of this Zorba running across the snow, and it's quite creepy, basically, because it's very unnatural. What you're seeing is very unnatural to you. It's a really good book. Tim Seeley delivers quite a lot of information in this first issue, but it all feels quite natural. All of the relation, it feels like you're watching people going about their day in this unnatural situation. So it's kind of uh-huh. got that to it, and it's a really interesting setting. It reminds me a little bit of Fargo. Oh,
sorry.
That's right. It reminds me a little bit of Fargo and a little bit of the show Justified, which I really love, in that the problems the police and the people there face are very different from ones that we're used to. So it's quite interesting. And it's got the mystery element of not really knowing what the hell is going on. And Mike Norton's art is just lovely. He handles the weird supernatural but beautiful elements really well, and the environments feel very remote and rural, but his character work is great, and at times reminded me a little bit, maybe because I'm very rooted in it at the moment, I've been reading a lot of it at the moment, but it reminds me quite a lot of Steve Lieber, the way he draws faces and facial expressions and stuff. So I really like that. Revival, $2.99 from Image. Okay. They produce great IP.
They do produce great IP. I have a clarification for you. It's a Zebroid.
Oh.
And Zebroids are also known as Zodonk, Zorse, or Zebra Mule. And it's essentially, it's a cross between a zebra and any other equine, usually a horse. Although rare, if they were to cross a donkey and a zebra, it would be called a Zebra Hinny or a Donkra. So now we know. Thank you, that's Wikipedia.
People playing God, that's just awful.
It is. Well,
the hubris.
I'm less uncomfortable with that than God playing God, because he's done all sorts of shit jobs with his, the things that go wrong.
I already know you're thinking about the duck-billed platypus.
What's that all about?
I know, crazy.
And peanuts on airlines. Seriously. proof if needs be that there is no God.
Proof if proof be need be.
Airline food.
I really like that comic.
Shane has now sampled.
Sorry? Oh yeah, she has. Yeah. Would she have had time to eat on that trip?
Oh God, I hope so. She gets very hungry. I hope she had time.
She does. That is one of her defining characteristics.
It is.
Excuse me. So comics, well. Yeah. You had a really big week this week, and I hardly bought anything. But did you notice there were two huge Image books this week? There was like one shots. There was one that was about £7 that was called like Massive or Gigantic or something.
Okay.
That was on display, and it was actually sort of big magazine size, too big to go in a comic box, that's for damn sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another book which had a really glorious red and white cover that was also a one-shot graphic novel that there was no way I was going to be able to afford going there today.
That's not the only big Image books that were out this week that neither of us bought.
The Walking Dead 100.
Which was very, very popular. It was selling like the proverbial hot cakes.
Ah.
Actually, the nice thing about going to the comic book shop this week, actually, was going at lunchtime and seeing how busy it is.
I think it died down a bit by the time I got there.
No, it was really buzzy by the time when I was in there. It was good.
But yeah, I mean, it was quite exciting bumping into you down there and stuff. And I suppose it was... The Walking Dead... thing seems odd to me though, because yes, 100 is a landmark and they have made a big fuss about it, but it is one of the bleakest fucking books on the market, and that doesn't mean it isn't high quality, but it's kind of having the variant covers and all of the effect and all of the excitement and everything on it feels kind of like there being a Christmas episode of The Wire. Or something like that.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? It just
yeah.
It's just a bit confusing. So yeah, and we didn't buy it, but I'm way behind on the Walking Dead comic. I need to start picking up the trades again because I got
I
to
want
about
a dog
the 40.
For Christmas, Idris Elba.
Sorry.
I want a dog for Christmas, Idris Elba. With that's what I'd call the Christmas edition of The Wire.
It'd be an edition of The Wire where everybody learnt a very important lesson about friendship.
Yeah, even though Snoopy tries to inadvertently ruin it for them all, it all pans out well at the end, and they all dance with their heads up in the air in a circle, holding hands.
Snoopy.
Yeah.
That was really clever.
Thank you.
There were a couple of conversations today. That I don't know, because I was so angry this week, the internet seemed like the perfect place for me to be.
Don't knock it, it's an energy, according to Britain's new favourite social commentator.
What is?
Anger.
Anger is an energy?
It is, yeah.
Who said that? Dannii Minogue?
That's right, yeah.
Is she the newest social commentator?
That's right, she was on Question Time, wasn't she?
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Today, in particular, I had two conversations. with. I think J. Michael Straczynski has kind of set things off a little bit by referring to IP very specifically rather than stories.
By which you mean intellectual property rather than internet protocol.
Yes. Yeah, and it just reminded me that a few weeks ago I decided that the whole of comics is at the mercy of the tyranny of IP. Everyone's thinking about it too much. All of the readers, all of the publishers, everyone. I reckon. It made me very angry.
I've probably been guilty of not thinking about it enough.
For damn sure. Certainly, though, I am much less likely. I know it sounds... in most cases, will try. This is another conversation that people were having this week. Certainly, I know Max Barnard, and I think maybe Ryan K. Lindsay.
And but he's nothing. He's a professional agitator. He's, you know, what those Australians are like.
Yeah, but I think they were all talking about whether or not someone's personality would stop you buying their work. And
yes.
I have to be, and that was actually a question someone asked
us. It was,
yes. Was it Max or was it?
I believe so, yes.
And actually, I think outside of the industry, I don't know if their personality, unless it massively reflects on their work, like their work's all about something that I find distasteful, it probably isn't going to impact on me that much. But when someone that I have seen as particularly mercenary or particularly divisive, actually within the comic industry, has work out, it can't help but affect how I feel about buying their stuff. David Wynn quite rightly...
I like his stuff.
He quite rightly called me out earlier on today on, because I hadn't really made myself clear, on judging the whole of a publisher based on what some of its creators have said. Uh-huh. Actually, to be honest, you know, I think the whole thing is ridiculous. Yeah. But once creators or people within the industry start telling us that we're supposed to hold everyone to their word, and we're supposed to judge everyone by the businesses they work for, then let's put it this way. Once people start telling us that we're supposed to look very, very closely at the people who are working on a series of books like Before Watchmen, then I find it impossible not to start looking very, very closely at everything they're doing as well.
That's fair enough.
Because either all of that stuff's important or none of it is. You know, creators are just trying to... Everyone's just trying to make a living, really. Oh, but one story that happened this week was Billy Tucci. Was it Billy Tucci or Stanley Tucci? Billy Tucci.
Yeah.
On the Blackwater book. Did you read about that?
Yeah, I think you should probably post a link to that story on our show notes. That left a really unpleasant taste in my mouth.
Very uncomfortable. Even if I edit out all of the blather that we've just been talking about, I will probably leave the thing about Billy Tucci and not Stanley Tucci. He's an actor, isn't he?
I hate to be this black and white about it, but from what I understand, there's an individual that's off the artistic roll call, as far as I'm concerned, as Bill Hooks would put it.
Yeah, it's
that really is a dollar that I think you can turn down.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And one thing that I think set me off a little bit today was someone likening it to the Before Watchmen books.
Sorry.
And that to me, not likening it, basically, and admittedly they were saying that it was worse, but they felt the need to mention the two things in one tweet. And I was like, yeah, there's a perspective fail there, because one's actually a story about a group of people who commit like real world murder and rape and stuff like that, allegedly, and the other one's like about Alan Moore.
You say allegedly. I think it's relatively easy to find some hard evidence if you look, not very deeply on the internet.
I mean, it's definitely about Alan Moore.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
The other thing...
Sorry, go on.
The other thing that came up today is I realised after Ryan K. Lindsay used the term, and this is no reflection on him, that I actually don't think the terminology... What was it? Creator-owned comic creators. I think that was it. Creator-owned comic creators, I don't think is helpful, because there are comic creators.
Yeah.
But
creator-owned comics
is a sort of, is a sort of work that they do, but strictly speaking, any of them are capable of doing anything, really.
Well, I think you typically describe Brian Wood as a creator-owned comic creator, but Dark Horse, he's doing franchise work, isn't he? So,
well, he's doing Ultimate X-Men.
And exactly. So, no, I saw you, so I agreed with that.
So, but it is a term that gets used quite a lot, and it's another one of those divisive terms that I'm not sure is particularly helpful. While we're on the subject, though, Ryan did ask us to mention that he is working on... bear with me a second. Let me see if I can find this.
Did you hear that?
He has got a story in a Kickstarter book called Oxymoron, which is an anthology book, I guess.
Cool.
I haven't had much of a chance to look at it, to be honest. But he's very excited about it. He just wants to make us aware of this Kickstarter for a book he wrote a story in. It's called The Oxymoron Book, and it's going to be a killer. It's up on Kickstarter now. You can download one of the tales on there, and I believe it's an anthology. It's a hardcover anthology book over at Kickstarter.
We'll have to get ourselves onto that. Ryan's a very hardworking individual, and he's someone I can imagine this time next year will be attending as a creator himself the San Diego Comic-Con, which is on at the moment.
Oh, gosh, so it is.
And I think you've missed the really big news of the week. You've said, this was the news of the week. Really big news of the week is the first reviews of the Dread film have been coming out from SDCC. And it sounds fucking excellent.
It does. It sounds like what I thought the trailer sounded like, which is it's like a really good, solid action, like science fiction action movie that happens to have Dread in, and it's going to be a bit dark and a bit, maybe a bit funny, darkly funny, but I don't know.
People are loving it.
People have seen it, haven't they? And they love it.
It's getting really good reviews. This may sound like heresy to at least one listener. I'm more excited about Dread than I am the new Batman film.
Genuinely. Do you know, I think I am.
Yeah.
We had a long conversation about that in the week as well. I'd like to know what all of our listeners thought of The Dark Knight, because I think it's great, but I don't think it's magical.
I love Nolan's take on Batman, but I'm just so excited to see a Dread film done correctly. And the interviews I've seen, I forget the guy who's writing the script, and John Wagner, really good interview on Empire. And they're talking about they've already got ideas for a Judge Death story in the sequel. And if it isn't a massive success, my life will be incomplete. I want to see a credible Judge Death. Centric movie. But they've got to set the world up first. They mention they're quite right.
I think you're right. Otherwise, you won't care when they start killing lots of people in it. quickly, another thing as well. Peter Hammerson, a friend of the show, got in touch with us via email, and he asked us a question. He said lots of very nice things, but the pertinent bit is he asked us a question. He said, do you have or did you ever have a backlog of unread comics? If so, how did you deal with it? He says, I have made the decision to not buy any more comics for now, as the list of comics and trades I own, but I haven't read numbers over 1,000, which is frankly ridiculous. I know you've had backlogs before.
Yeah, it's discipline, Nick. Discipline. To the point where actually the fun is taken out. I find a backlog the most stressful thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, at times, takes the fun out of reading. When you're reading because you feel pressure to not be behind, and it, in a way, sometimes it's made a little bit worse, because obviously we do a podcast. I'm quite keen to stay current.
Yeah.
Don't like to fall behind, because I know if there's a book I want to review, like, say, for example, Batman, I have to read that before the next one comes out, because we definitely want to talk about the Becky Cloonan issue.
Yeah.
And it sometimes that takes the fun out of it. I don't know. You set a little time aside and try and read two or three an evening. It's when you get that many, you've got to read. It's really difficult to do it without... You know, comics should be fun, shouldn't they? So
yeah.
I say, don't worry, be happy.
Alternatively, Peter, you could stick them all in a box, send them to me, I'll have them.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I'm quite good at reading comics. It's DVDs and books I'm really bad at. And in terms of how to deal with them, honestly couldn't tell you. I'm one of nature's hoarders, so I like owning the stuff, but I'm not so good at actually getting through it. Comics I've never had that problem with. But thank you for the question. You're awesome. How have our other listeners handled backlogs of comics?
Alternatively, move to a country with guaranteed sunshine,
mm-hmm.
take a big chunk of time off, go and find a shady tree, and just sit there with your big stack of comics under your shady tree, and just crack on until you're done.
I think that's a good idea.
I think so.
I was trying to ask the listener, though. What do you think, listener? Have you ever had a backlog of comics? And how did you deal with it? Thank you, Peter. That was awesome.
It was. How can they let us know, Nick, do you think?
They can email us at momcast@gmail.com. They can tweet us where we told them. Which was either at Nick's site or at James Mom. To be honest, though, if you do that, we'll have a conversation with you there and then, but we'll probably forget about it soon afterwards.
Almost certainly.
So drop us an email. That would be brilliant. Okay, I think that's us done for 1 week. What are you doing with the rest of your week, James?
Showing Bugsy Malone to my daughter.
Oh, yeah. You get to do that.
Yeah. Not looking at the torch, which arrives in Southampton on Saturday, but it's going to piss down with rain. I won't stand in the rain to look at a torch.
That's the amount of rain we're having at the moment is hilarious.
Oh, don't.
Speaking of which, I'm going to be on holiday next week, so you're going to be doing the show with Jane, and I'm going to be somewhere else getting
there. May or may not be a Momcast next week.
Yes, but it's going to be nice. It's going to be a week off work, which is just what I need right now. So that's that. So I'm not going to see you for 2 weeks, James, or listener. We should say goodbye to listener. Thank you for listening, listener. You're awesome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay there a minute.
I'm sitting. I'm staying.
I'll be right back.
Hurry up. I like that Neil Gaiman signed up to do five books for HarperCollins, five children's books. That's very, very exciting. I'm looking forward to buying those and read them to my little girl. That'd be nice. I think I might have apologised to Brian Wood for getting fanboy geeky about his Star Wars run. It's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? Probably shouldn't be getting this excited. It's gone very quiet your side, Nick. I'm very worried. Maybe the dogs have eaten you. Which would be...
5 minutes, just got to say goodbye.
Oh, no, there he is.
Just got to get rid of him,
don't worry.
Okay?
No, I'll fob him off, I'll get rid of him. It's cool, don't worry about it.
Are you squared away?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll cut that together so that it's coherent. Sure.